Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.
Well, happy Monday, everybody, and thank you so much for tuning in to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill. Today, we're excited to have back with us a repeat guest from last year, Maria Barraquette. You may remember from last year's social media show that she did on LinkedIn that Maria provided us with many of the highlights of LinkedIn. And so because there have been so many changes in the last 6 months to a year on LinkedIn, I thought it would be very appropriate timing to bring her back now. So to remind you a little bit about Maria's background, Maria Barraquette is a social media and branding consultant, as well as a LinkedIn strategist, internet geek, and incurable problem solver. Her work focuses on bridging the gap of the digital divide that was created when technology took over the marketplace. Her passion is working with business owners and professionals who need to learn how to use social media to grow their brands through leadership. She recently wrote a series of social media marketing articles for the Art World News, guiding struggling retailers on how to embrace social media as a marketing tool to attract new customers. Maria has been marketing for over 20 years and remembers the world when the Yellow Pages ruled everything. As an early adopter of anything digital, Maria's strength is bringing innovation to any problem, teaching people to embrace technology and learn how to communicate in our digital world is not only her passion, but I love this, her superpower. Design Bear Marketing is her business site, but many of her thoughts, articles, and insights are best found posted on her LinkedIn profile, a site she feels is our common portal to the global business world. You can always send her a connection request at mbear88@gmail.com and start networking. So Maria, thank you again for coming and joining us on the show again.
My pleasure, Jennifer. It's so good to be here, and I'm so excited because so much has changed.
I know. It's amazing. We just did this show. It was just a little less than a year ago. I think it was last August. And I feel like you had so much great information that you shared, and a lot of that is now not irrelevant, but significantly changed. So tell me a little bit about how you got into being a social media expert, and then let's talk about what's shifted and changed with LinkedIn.
Sure. Thank you again. When I tell people how I got started, I usually give a story about a texting machine that I discovered, but I recently really did a little reevaluation on myself, and I realized that it all happened for me in 2008. I went back to school. I wanted to get a degree in graphic design to add it to my marketing, and this was a defining moment for me as a 40-year-old woman sitting in a classroom full of a bunch of 20-year-olds, and over the course of our schoolwork, they were constantly sending me connection requests for Facebook. And then they started talking about this program, this professional program. What do you think, Maria, about this program called LinkedIn? Would you connect with me? Would you be my connection? And I really thought they were crazy. But over the course of time, I got involved in both of the sites. And it occurred to me, Jennifer, in that moment, like, if all of these college students are doing this, the retail world is in trouble because nobody was doing it. Nobody was talking about LinkedIn. Everybody was signing up and then not doing anything. And everyone thought that Facebook was something and it wasn't. And it changed me and the course of my life. And that's really the moment for me where I had to be involved in social media. It had to be part of my marketing, you know, product base.
So it sounds like you had your own evolution. In fact, I was reading the article that you sent me recently that you wrote about how you were one of the people who was greatly impacted by the 2008 recession, and that kind of had you completely reinvent yourself and shift gears from traditional marketing to more of the social marketing aspect. Is that true?
It totally did. It was me, along with hundreds of thousands of people, were unemployed, and that's why I went back to school. And I really thought that I would end up going back and doing what I had done before once the economy improved. And in fact, because I went to school and went through all that I did, I decided that I had to go out and help business owners really begin to capture the future because I knew it was going to be difficult for them. I was forced into it. And I've never looked back. It was really a defining moment for me. And I know there are a lot of other people out there, too, who are thinking about it. I think, and you would agree, I hope, that reinvention is just part of our work world now. We have to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. We had Liz Ryan on the show at the end of January, and her book is called Reinvention Roadmap. And I remember my PR guy back at the time, God bless his heart, Richard Berman, was hammering it into me between 2008 and 2013. Jen, you have to write a book on reinventing yourself. And Liz beat me to the punch, but it's so true, because job hunting now is not what it was like 5 years ago or 10 or 15 or, God forbid, 20 or 30 years ago. It's changed so dramatically the way that people go about getting jobs and how they get hired, that things like LinkedIn are, in my opinion, a necessity, whether you're a business owner or a job seeker.
Exactly. And that's really why they were forced to make this big change. And it's slow. If you think about it, they have 400 and I think it's 415 million members.
So wow.
It's taking months to convert name by name by name. And they're not even through the whole list. But it's overdue, but I think it's really responding to the whole idea of reinvention as a career, a part of our careers. And so that's what I think a lot of the changes are. So we'll talk about that, too.
Yeah, so I know for me, it's something that I used to teach classes regularly on LinkedIn myself, but didn't study it to the extent that you did. And I find myself every day I go on LinkedIn and there's some new feature or missing feature or different feature. What are a few of the biggest changes that you've seen that LinkedIn has made, and how good or bad do you think, or let's veer away from good or bad. Let's look at maybe effective or less effective. What are you seeing with those changes that they have implemented?
I think the biggest change for most people is they're going to see that the design is crisper and clearer. And for those of us like you and I, we've been using it, maybe some of the features that are lost or we can't really find don't seem so great anymore. But I do find overall it's much more intuitive. And I would say that among the top changes that people need to look at is the very first thing is that homepage. When you click on that homepage, you see your profiles now on the left-hand side. It's sort of de-emphasized. Your news feed is the prominent thing that you're looking at now. And the menus became smaller and more clear. Our photos became round, which according to many people, they say that it's more flattering for us. But people need to be aware of that, because if your picture was too crammed in there before, now it could be. So you need to just go in there and make sure that the picture still looks good. And now you don't have your whole profile showing. This is important for people to think about. So the real estate became more important, and through some of the other changes, LinkedIn is sort of directing us. So, for example, you cannot move parts of your profile around anymore. That's personally very frustrating for me. I liked being able to have my skills up, and if I worked with somebody who was, you know, recently got a degree, that we could put their education up top and focus on that kind of thing. LinkedIn said, no, we're going to do it in a certain order. And so all that means is that makes certain parts of your profile even more important. So it's different. You know, it's just a little bit different. So the skills section, which is now all the way at the bottom, a little frustrating, but it's still there. Your skills are the most important because of the keywords. So you as a recruiter, when you're searching for people, you're searching for my skills. You're searching for my keywords. So if they're not in my skills section, you're not going to find me, right? But now, when you look at someone's profile, if you're just sort of scanning, only their top three skills show. That makes those three skills very important. You have to think about it now. You wouldn't want to put Word as one of your first skills, because we assume everybody knows that. So you want to put what's really key. So that's a feature that's changed quite a bit in the personal part of it. And I think the other most important aspect from the personal profile standpoint is when you click the home button, the very first thing that you see, even before your own profile photo, is the share an article, photo, or update. And this is all part of their strategy. They want to help people with the trajectory of their careers. And this is the area that they want us to pay attention to, what we think about, what's important to us, where, you know, what are the things that in our career and our expertise that are important. So they're making it front and center, and it's very easy to find. And so that's really important on that.
So can I diverge for a moment here and take you back to the skills section? Because I hear what you're saying is before it used to have a laundry list of all your skills. So my question becomes this. I know you said be careful about the skills that you want to list. My experience in looking at my own profile, for example, is that the skills that are listed at the top, if I'm not mistaken, are the skills that I've been endorsed for the most. Would you say that is accurate or not accurate?
That's not accurate.
Really?
You actually can put in order all of the skills that you want. You can remove the ones that are redundant or not important, and you can move them up. So, for example, as someone in social media, it's only within the last year or so that people really started using the word content strategy. I always used content or content marketing, so I had to change some of my skills and keywords, and I moved them around. So I still kept social media marketing as my primary skill because that's the primary thing that I do, but I move them around. So if you're looking at your own profile, you can change any order. So you can move LinkedIn up or down. You can if you do webinars or you are a public speaker and these are important things to your career and what you're doing now, I encourage people, move them around because our lives change and our work changes. So you can actually go in and switch it.
That is brilliant. I'm so happy you brought that to my attention. Again, it's if I were to go back and change it, it's like you said, any recruiter or person who might be looking at my profile, I don't do real career counseling anymore with the exception of offering this show to the general public. And yet it's listed as one of my top three skills. So it might behoove me to move it to public speaking or, you know, something else that was more in line with what I'm focused on now. And I think that's a great piece of advice for any job seekers out there. Another question for you, I'm going to stay on the subject for a minute because I think it's so important to the job seekers out there who are looking. My understanding as well is, say if I do as a recruiter, a Boolean search in the top search function, and I'm looking for the words, let's say hypothetically, litigation and paralegal, because I have a litigation paralegal job. My understanding, it used to be this way at least, was that it would search the person's entire profile for the words litigation and paralegal. Or are you saying that now it only searches the skills? I want to make sure that our listeners understand that.
No, it does search. There's an algorithm behind it. So when you just put in a keyword like litigation, it will go in and it will scan your entire profile.
Okay,
and
great.
Remember that when these algorithms are there, the more time you're using these keywords, so under your experience, under your education, under your summary, under your title, Maria is going to pop up. So you don't want to pad with things, but that's why it's very important that under every single area in your profile, you need to have words about what your skills are. So, this is a great example. If you're someone that does litigation and you've only put it as your heading and maybe the title at your current job, that's only twice. Whereas someone else, a younger litigator who writes about it in their summary, puts it as a few bullet points, talks about it in a project, maybe they did some nonprofit work with litigation. So now their keyword for this word could be 25. They're going to rank higher than the person who has more years of experience. So that's why when you are searching, you can't just automatically assume that the top 20 people that are coming up are in fact the most qualified. They're just the people that word is in there more often. So it's a kind of good news, bad news for you.
Okay. And so I'm going to keep with this conversation for a minute, and then I want to be sure that we cover all the changes that LinkedIn is making. I know, for example, I was speaking with one of the experts at LinkedIn on the, hey, let's get you upgraded sort of a thing on LinkedIn. They're trying to get me to upgrade my account from a premium account. So for me, as I was mentioning to you earlier, I think to myself, okay, I'm very fortunate. I already have 8,000 or so people in my network, plus then I have 30,000 names in my database. What good is it really going to do me if the person says, great, we're going to search on LinkedIn, 17,000 paralegals pull up, on LinkedIn within LA and Orange County. But what caught my attention, and I thought this was a fascinating feature, is that they were explaining to me that there's now a little button that you can click that says, I have my hand up. It basically says, I want recruiters to approach me about jobs. And this is really LinkedIn kind of taking it to the next level, in my opinion, of going more, not the job board route, but like you said, it's very much more oriented towards careers in general now. Have you heard much about that function, or what are your thoughts on it?
You know, it's one of those functions that is in your, when you set up your profile. So I encourage everyone, this is a great opportunity with all the changes, go in to, there's a tab up at the top called Work, and you can actually look at, go to the help screen, really go in and search how your public profile looks. It's on the right-hand side. There's new sections that they add. And this is where things like what you're saying, do I want recruiters to contact me or not? I believe that it defaults to yes. You can go in and change it to no. Just like the first thing I tell people to turn off is notify your network of every time that you change something on your profile. This isn't a very good strategy because you really should be in there changing things all the time, changing your photo, changing your words, and you don't want to bombard your own network with every single time you do something new. So having recruiters is another one of those features that you can turn on and turn off. So for someone who's really interested in that, I would just go to the help button and put that in. Recruiters, and then it'll give you where it is in there.
Brilliant. Yeah, I think that's a wonderful thing. I'm just trying to think of the different changes specifically that they've been making for job seekers. And of course, it does have an impact on how employers are searching for candidates as well. So what were some of the other changes that you've noticed and how that's impacted the usability of LinkedIn?
I think when you're looking at someone's profile, so if I go in and I take a look at a profile. What's really nice is now all of the contact information is right on the right-hand side.
Correct.
It used to be a little difficult if you remember. You had to find the little buttons and you had to click it. Now it's right there and you click that show more button and there it is. There's your LinkedIn profile, your email, your Twitter, your birthday if you so put it on there, and any other information that you yourself have given people. And that's the number one thing in looking at someone else's profile. The other really great thing is next to that picture and your name are three little dots. And when you click those dots, this is where you interact with other people. And it used to be very frustrating to me that I could never find out how to ask someone for a recommendation or how to give someone a recommendation or even how to remove a connection. It used to be very complex. Now it's right there at those three dots. I can share that profile. So if there's a candidate that you like that you want to pass along to someone else, all you have to do is share it, or they now give you this great thing where you can download it to a PDF, and I think that's wonderful. You can download it, email it to people. It's really such a usable document now where everything that you have marked on your public profile can be downloaded onto a PDF and sent out. Just like a regular, it's really a professional-looking sort of CV. Like if you were going to an interview and you wanted to bring your resume, I would also print that off and bring them a copy of your LinkedIn profile so it looks really nice. We didn't used to be able to do that.
Yeah, for me, one of the biggest things that I've always been an advocate of, and I'd like to get your two cents on how important it still is that I believe that the reference letter of old times past has no clout. It has no merit anymore, because back in the day, it used to be that you would have this amazing letterhead signed by a top executive saying that Maria Barakat or Jennifer Hill was the best at whatever she did. And nowadays, if you show up with a letter of recommendation, it's something that we could all easily go, anybody with a half a background in any sort of technology could go and create a falsified version of that. And for me, I think the recommendations have always been a very important section, because you can see how many you've received or how many you've given, or is everybody that you've given a recommendation to recommending you back? And I find them very hard to falsify. What are your thoughts on that, and have they changed that part of the platform at all?
Well, I totally agree with you that having a recommendation on LinkedIn is completely different than the old days when you could get a letter. Yes, those letters looked beautiful, but you really didn't know who that person was. You know, it could be your brother-in-law for all you know. Now you have to have a relationship. So the only thing I see that they have changed is that they've made it easier to find. It was probably the number one complaint that I made to them in dealing with the public and helping them with their profiles, is why is it so darn hard to ask for a recommendation and to give a recommendation? And now it's right there. So when you press that button, let's say you have a job hunter who's out there and they have people in their prior work history that could give them recommendations. My recommendation for them is to reach out to them personally through email, but always ask them to talk about something. You have to have a relationship via LinkedIn. So what that means is I can't ask my sister to give me a recommendation for my training because she doesn't have a relationship with her current job and my job, even though I'm a business owner. So, and that's what I think keeps it kind of on the up and up for you as a recruiter. When you look at it, you know they can't lie. I'm sure there's somebody out there that figured out how to do it, but it's very difficult.
Hold on, Maria. Let me pause you. I just got what you said. I'm so sorry to interrupt you, but I never realized that before. So you're saying that if, for example, you and I weren't directly connected, does it have to be with my company in order to be able to recommend me? It has to be with one of my original organizations that's listed on my LinkedIn profile.
Correct.
In order to connect or in order to recommend me? That is brilliant. I don't think I realized that was a prerequisite, but it just makes me like that function all the more.
Yeah, we have to have a relationship. So, for example, we do have a relationship. We're connected to each other. So that's the first prerequisite. We have to be connected. So you can't get a recommendation for someone you're not connected to. And then when you go in and start filling out the little buttons, it says, what is your relationship to Jennifer? And then there's a button, and it says, she directly managed you. She reported directly to you. She was senior to you. You worked together. You were clients. You taught something. You mentored. These are new things that they added. They never used to be the mentoring relationship, the teaching or the advising or the students part. They're really, really responded to how the universities were asking. But so you and I have to have some kind of a relationship. So once you pick that, if you were clients, then it says, well, what was your position at the time? So they're matching us up so that when that recommendation comes through, when you look at my profile and you see that I have three recommendations, you know exactly the relationship that that person had to me and which job and position that we were apart. So they supervised me or we worked together or whatever our relationship was. You have a very clear idea before you even read their words. And that's what makes it really powerful, because you have that ability to ask someone that you worked with or even that you were coworkers with. Now, the catch here, the thing that I think that your listeners need to know, is think about what you want to ask. The biggest mistake I see with recommendations is that you get all your courage to ask that former boss or coworker to write you something. And most people hate writing, you know, so they fear of speaking, right? We all hate that. Well, writing is the second thing. So they won't write the best thing for you. So you need to ask them specifically. So if I were to ask you to give me a recommendation, I would prompt you and I would say, hey, Jennifer, if you remember, always remind them how you know each other. And I would say, would you talk about the show that we did on the changes of LinkedIn and how you got several emails from people about how much they really enjoyed it? So I'm not just throwing it at you and asking you to take time out of your busy day. I'm saying, I have this very specific need, and this is what I want you to talk about. And then you know that the recommendations you're getting bolster your profile and bolster your ability to get a new job or change your career or promote yourself, because the information that people is writing about you is the stuff that you want. Because I have an example of someone. I did so much work for University in Boston. I cannot even tell you, pro bono and paid. And she said, oh, of course I'll give you a LinkedIn recommendation. And she wrote, Maria is great. That's what she wrote. And I never gotten her to come back and re-edit it for me. So I actually have hidden it. You have the ability to hide. because it doesn't, to me, bolster. I have other things that are much better, light, but I learned a really tough lesson with that. You always ask them to talk about a project or talk about a particular skill. If you're trying to reinvent yourself and go into project management and you manage something, you'd say, would you talk about that project that I managed, mention the number of people and how well you thought I did. Then the person you're asking has just taken this huge task and made it very small.
Got it. That's brilliant.
Good.
Yeah, I think that's wonderful advice because, like I mentioned, I think LinkedIn recommendations are a great way to showcase yourself. It's still that catch-22. Just recently, I had a job seeker who sent me her resume that had her picture on it. And because of different legal compliance-related laws in California or around the United States, you still can't technically include a picture with your resume without crossing that gray area of non-discrimination. But what's great about LinkedIn, I always tell people, please, if you have a fully put-together LinkedIn profile and you're job hunting, don't make it hard for the employer to find you. Just copy and paste your LinkedIn URL and include that URL on your resume or on your business cards. I think it's a great marketing tool.
It definitely is. I agree with you 100%. That should be name, contact information, and LinkedIn URL. Very important.
And so were there other changes that were glaring changes or important things that you want to make sure that we highlight or cover? I know we want to talk about the publishing aspect because I know that's been a much more emphasized feature recently, as we touched on earlier. Do you want to talk about that now or other aspects that you think we should highlight?
I have one more important thing that seems very insignificant, but it's really not. At the very top of the menu, there's the little bell. It was there before. It was called notifications, and it lights up when you obviously have notifications. The difference is now when you click it, it opens a new page. It used to just be a down menu, and then you could see that you had requests or whatever. The reason they put notifications on a single page is because they want you to network. This is their whole lifeblood. And this is like having a personal assistant, Jennifer. It's wonderful. It says, hey, Maria, Katie Hill has a new job, or Linda Reach has a birthday today, or someone else got a promotion. It also lets me know who has interacted with things that I've written or commented on, and I can actually click my analytics right there in the notifications page. So it gives you an ability to spend an hour a day or 30 minutes a day doing what we used to do back in the day where we met for breakfast at 7, we all had our business cards. Remember those days when we had coffee? And then we would hand everybody business cards. Here's your opportunity to go in and introduce yourself to people. And I do it all the time because I have a lot of connections, probably like you, where we don't know each other very well, or sometimes they'll be like, Maria, who? It's a chance for me to introduce myself to them and say, hey, Rachel, you know, I know we're connected on LinkedIn. I know we're not personally connected, but I just wanted to congratulate you. It's great. I see you got a promotion, and I know a lot about the Children's Hope Center, and, you know, good for you. And now you even have emojis in there, which is fantastic because that saves us from writing too many words that we stumble over. But it gives you the ability to network, and that's what LinkedIn really wants. So the notifications tab at the top is probably the number one thing that they want you to do. They want you to network with people and connect with them and talk to them, and they want you to do it all through LinkedIn. They don't want you to do it on email or Facebook or Instagram. They want you to really stay in here and make this your primary daytime activity.
Networking.
So yeah, that is really next to the publishing aspect. This is really their key thing. And I think that it scares a lot of people because they don't know how to do it. And I think you're going to see a lot of classes popping up about, you know, how to network on LinkedIn and how to write. Like, writing has become a very important skill now. I'm sure you notice it all the time with resumes and cover letters. Now we have to be able to craft little messages to people that we don't know.
On that point, though, I do want to just say a word of caution to the listeners out there about emojis, because once upon a time, many years ago, before emojis were even a popular thing, about 8 years ago, I had a relatively junior executive assistant who was up for a position with a CEO of a Fortune 500 company. It was, I kid you not, Maria, her seventh round interview, and she went in, she knocked his socks off. It was awesome. Now, it wasn't through LinkedIn that she did it, but she sent him an email that said, "Hi, Mr. CEO, exclamation, happy face. Can't wait till she had already received the job offer. So excited to accept your offer, happy face, happy face. Cannot wait to start with you, another happy face, another exclamation point. So looking forward to starting, XYZ job seeker." And they, to this day, it makes my skin crawl because they literally rescinded the job offer. So I would just caution people to know your audience. If it's somebody who maybe seems like a little bit more hip and fun and just, yeah, into it, great. Or if you're dealing with a company that is maybe a little bit more or less conservative, perhaps, go for it, have at it. But if you're emailing any executive level hiring person at a company working on developing that relationship, I would just really use extreme caution with overly emojiing it. I know I hate to even have to mention that story, but I always want to put it out there because I could just see people going hog wild and being like, oh yeah, there's that great emoji button. And Maria and Jennifer said, I should just use that. And oh dear God, there goes a CEO of some company or another getting emoji buttons from people.
No, you are, that's a great story too. My rule of thumb with emojis, because I'm not that crazy about them, but I find, being not in the younger crowd, that if I don't use them, so there's that fine line, like you say.
Yeah.
I always look at it like, if I am the senior person in this messaging or email and I find that it's appropriate, I usually only use one anyway, I will use it. But if it's someone that I don't know, that it's, you know, a different level, I don't know anything about them, they could be 50, they could be, you know, who knows, I would never use it. Never. Yeah, I agree with you. You need to be professional.
Yeah, just, you know, it's like anything. If you're going in for an interview at Facebook, yeah, it's probably okay to wear jeans and a t-shirt. I mean, again, check with your recruiter before you do that. But if you're going into a bank, you're going to want to wear a suit. Just know your audience just like anything else. And I want to acknowledge you, Maria, because since our last time where we had you on the show, I remember that before we did the show, you kind of did some analytics for me on my own profile. So I would gladly write you a recommendation because I know it made a big difference for me. And you said to me, Jen, your intention is to be a global thought leader, and yet you haven't written a post in over 6 months. And as we were talking about right before the show went on air, I just went right over my head. It was this huge missed opportunity for me where I was one of the early adopters that had the privilege of writing posts before everybody had access to that. And I was so grateful that you brought that to my attention because, as I said, after I wrote that first book, Stop Hoping, Start Hunting, my brain just went on shutdown and refused to write anything for a good solid year or two. But like you said, I was losing all of that momentum because here I am putting myself forth as a global thought leader, and yet it wasn't consistent with my brand on LinkedIn. So that made a huge difference for me. And ever since then, I think I've been writing at least one or more articles a month, thanks to your feedback.
Yeah, you, and I do, I'm one of your followers, and I do think that it's great that you do it. Because people, the way I look at it is, we need to hear from you. We all do. We live in a world where jobs are different and careers are different. And what you have to say as an expert in the industry of recruiting is very important. And it is important for us to read it and to look at it and say, wow, what is she thinking in her mind? And just because you wrote a book, you can always take a chapter of your book and talk about it, you know, just to give you some ideas of things to write. Because, you know, today people don't take the time to read books anymore. It would be nice to recap that. So I'm glad that you've done
brilliant,
it.
Brilliant, as always. So, yeah, so thank you for that. So on the publishing front, let's talk about that a little bit and then leave the job seekers with a couple of tips on how to best utilize some of the features that we might not have covered if we haven't already. So with regards to publishing, because I know you said that's the direction that things are going, and as we were just mentioning, it's such an important tool that can really increase your clout on LinkedIn and in your network. Tell our listeners a little bit about publishing and how and when it should be used.
Well, publishing is probably one of the best ways for job seekers to use LinkedIn. Now, this is, of course, after they've optimized their profile, which is to go through, you know, each one of the eight areas and make sure that you have a photo and a heading and things like that. But the publishing aspect is right there. When you click that homepage and you go in, it says, do you want to write an article or do you want to post an update? When you click that, when you click the write an article, it brings you to what used to be called a blogging site. But you have your own URL for it. That's what else is really nice. So I can just share my articles without sharing my profile as well. I can give people just an article that I write, and I do. I use it as a business owner. I promote myself. But as a person looking for a job, what's your expertise? What do you have? Let's say you sit down and you make a list of the 10 problems that you solve as a project manager working for a medical supply company, right? You have very different problems that you solve than an industrial designer who is designing furniture or any other job field, like a litigator. Publishing gives you the ability to put those solutions that you do on a daily basis in your job in written form. And by solving other people's problems, you begin to rise to the top of a search. So without even knowing it, Jennifer, when you're searching for someone, you have that litigation keyword that you just typed in. What you don't know is that part of that analytics says if this litigator is somebody who's written 100 articles or 10 articles, they're going to rank higher. Because within that publishing world, it's telling us, the world, that this is someone you need to pay attention to. They're writing about things that matter in their career. Now, if they were just writing about their trip to Cuba or something, obviously it's not going to rank as high as another litigator who's writing about litigation. So it's all about keywords. So in that publishing field, it's good for people to have a strategy, especially job hunters. I was working with someone, and I actually approached him because his articles came across my feed. And I'm laughing because, you know what he wrote? I need a job. I'm a really good blank. I couldn't believe it. I just couldn't believe that someone would do that. So I looked at his profile and I wrote him a message, and he really argued with me. He thought that was going to be the way that he would do it. And I gave him a couple tips, and I told him exactly what I'm saying to all of the listeners on the call. Make a list of the 10 problems that you solve and write about them. Because if you can solve an employer's problems, you become more important to them. So when they're looking at your resume side by side, and then they go to your LinkedIn profile and they see this profile that's there and they see, wow, look at the problems that Maria can solve. She can come in here and do this. She just wrote a little article, 500 words to 1,000. Throw in a few pictures, a few bullet points, basic stuff in terms of writing, just like what we learned in high school and college. And it shows your expertise. And people do want to read it. I was amazed when I first was asked to write, and I thought, okay, I'll write. And I wrote some article. I couldn't believe that people were following me. And I even began to inquire on my followers, what was it that you found interesting, and why did you like this article? And it really changed sort of the direction of some of the things I do in my own work on a daily basis, because the things I thought were important weren't as important to them. So the job hunter, you have the ability to solve problems for people before they even interview you and find you that way. So it's really an important thing. And LinkedIn has made this easy. It saves automatically now. You can save drafts in there. You get a phone call. You say, oh, I can't do this now. You X out. It's there. It doesn't go away. So you can always go back and publish these articles. Buttons right there. It gives you the ability to share them to your social media. And that's another thing that people don't do, job hunters. So let's say you are a job hunter and you're a little embarrassed. You don't really want everyone on your Facebook newsfeed to know that, you know, you're either looking for a job or you need a job. But you write this great article about how you solved this problem. And now you share that to your Facebook and you say, hey, I just wanted everybody to know that I wrote this article on LinkedIn. You know, share it with anyone in the X industry. We all have family and friends. It's not threatening. They have no clue you're looking for work. They don't know anything other than, wow, I didn't even know that Tom did this. This is an amazing article. The feedback that you will get from it is wonderful, and the connections that you can get to it are really good. So publishing is the future, I believe. And I believe that that's why LinkedIn redesigned it so that you have that notifications tab for networking and now publishing as a way for you to really build your own personal brand, your own skills, what I call, you were laughing, superpowers.
I love
where,
that.
This is where your superpowers are, because we all have them. I mean, you know this. We're competing. We have 1,000 people competing for jobs nowadays. I mean, I remember the day, yes, I'm dating myself, when you circled things in a newspaper and you made a phone call and then you went to an office and there were 7 people sitting with all in the same suits with our resumes in hand. And we used to go in and shake hands and meet people and somebody got hired. Now you're going on the computer and you're entering in there and you don't know what's happening to it. And there's thousands of people that we're competing against. So you as a recruiter, and you can answer this, what would you think of a candidate who, when you pulled up their LinkedIn profile and you saw, wow, they wrote 100 articles on project management for medical devices? Doesn't that put them in a different category for you?
It does. I remember one of my first mentors, social media mentors years ago, Edward Duterte, who first started training me on LinkedIn and other forms of social media. He said, Jen, you want to share information that other people have written to set yourself up as an expert. So I think it's a catch-22, because I think I'm talking about there's posting and then there's publishing. So my recommendation to people has always been, on the social media strategy standpoint, you want to publish perhaps one thing a day, or sorry, you want to post. I want to distinguish. You can post things and you can publish things. A little bit different. One is actually an article, like what Maria is talking about. And then a post is something that you could just share as a status update. And for me, I've always been a huge advocate of sharing other people's articles in the post section, anywhere from 1 to 5 articles a week, quotes related to your industry. And that way you're sharing other relevant information. And then to also share 1 to 5 a week or a month, whatever, however much time you have to devote to it, on the your own published articles standpoint, so that it kind of gives you a more well-rounded feeling, is my experience. And it helps people to relate to you. Oh, this person knows who the other experts are. Oh, they're sharing that person's info. Oh, wow, they wrote some stuff of their own. And I think it kind of closes the loop for me, at least, when I see that with job seekers. So when I see somebody who particularly has written their own articles, and if they have a lot of views on it, it's going to entice me as a recruiter, because I'm going to go, wow, this person has really set him or herself up as an expert in the field. And I think it's something that's just going to incentivize the employer all the more, be it a recruiter or otherwise, to want to reach out to you in the same way that all those other little things do, like having recommendations, having skills and endorsements, having a picture and a good title on your profile, a good summary. I think if you culminate all of it, each thing, you know, here's something I never thought of, Maria. It just came to me as I was saying this. Each thing almost has a point value system. And I'd love to brainstorm with you on this and just kind of see if, I don't know if you've ever thought of this yourself, but that you would get points for each thing that you have. Like, say you have a total possible of 100 points available on your LinkedIn profile, and 5 points might be having a picture. You might have 7.5 points for, I don't know what it would be, per recommendation, 1 point for every skill you have listed. And then maybe again, you would get another large amount, like 5 or 10 points for every article that you published. And so, and again, there might be a sliding scale of what's a good, great versus amazing profile and how much it stands out. I don't know why that just kind of came to me free flowing as we were talking about it.
I think it's a great idea, though, because you're exactly right. That is how your listeners need to think about it, is we do need to look at the profile. Go and look at anyone's profile and what you see. So you're seeing their headshot, their title. You're seeing their right there at the top. It says connections to the something outstanding. But then you're right. The very next section, and if it's profile.
Oh, Maria, you're cutting out. There we go. Okay, you say that last little bit again. I think you were just talking about profiles and how important it is to have all of that, and I want to make sure our listeners got all of that so they don't miss it.
Right. So when you look at someone's profile, the very next section that you see is your activity. And you were right to distinguish between an article and a post. So LinkedIn says what kind of activity. You find that article on your industry, make a little comment about it, you post it. And you're sharing other people's ideas and news, and then you write your own articles. But that comes up right at the next level after your summary. That tells you how important. It's above experience. So it says that in our world, what you say, your thoughts, who you follow, who you read matter, because it does make a difference. So I like the point system. I'm going to think about that.
I don't know. I was just thinking about that myself. I don't know why that just kind of came to me. I'm not sure what it would look like, but it would be a good way for kind of people to understand where they can get the most bang for their buck if they don't have time to go out and invest, you know, several hours into putting together an amazing profile. What would give you the most ROI on that, if that makes sense?
Right. Well, I can tell you that for sure, because we didn't really address that in this, is when you're looking at that profile, even with all the changes, the things that didn't change, you have to have a photograph. Have a photograph. 12 times more viewed when you have a photograph. You have to have a title, or what they call a heading, and it's not your job title. So if you're a project manager, that's wonderful, but that doesn't say anything. So it would be project manager / medical devices / customer service. It gives you enough keystrokes there that you can put administration, customer service, whatever it is that you're very good at, you can add that there. And then the very next section that needs to be there, a lot of people don't have it, is your summary. And this is where you really can be who you are. You don't need to use resume speak in here. This is where you're talking about you're focused and you're organized and you're detail-oriented and you're really passionate about, let's say you make surveys for a living and you just love numbers and columns and Excel spreadsheets. This is where you would write that, because if I'm going to hire someone to solve a problem, I need a survey writer who's organized and passionate and can problem solve. This is where I want to read it. And also, one other mention about the summary, have your contact information in there and a call to action. Make sure that you're telling people what you want. So even if you're employed and you love your job, you still have the opportunity to say, if you need help with, and what does your company do? Maybe they, you know, do project management. Say, give us a call and I'll direct you to the right department. That makes you look like a motivated employee or a really top-notch person that someone would want. So that's the other section. It didn't change, but it's really important. We already talked about skills. That is now, believe it or not, at the very bottom of our profile. You used to be able to move it. You can't. The next section beyond activity is experience. And I just want to mention this because we've been talking about it throughout. You want to make sure in your experience section that you don't just put a boring title. Don't put specialist or administrator. What is it that you administrated? Administration / customer service / and then have bullet points. Tell us what you did. Because that litigator example that we gave, if I just say that I'm a lawyer and I don't put any descriptive words and Jennifer is looking for me, somebody else is going to come up above me because they took the time to write a description about what they did.
With keywords in it. Absolutely. Well, Maria, again, you and I could spend hours and hours on this. In fact, I think it'll have to be my intention to have you on the show at least every 6 months, if not once a year for sure, because there's always so many changes and so much great feedback that you have for our listeners. So I want to make sure that they know where to reach out to you in case they want to hire you, whether it's for their business or for their own personal profile. Where can our listeners find your information?
The very best place to find me is on my LinkedIn profile, which
of
is
course.
Maria Barakat. But my company is designbearmarketing.com, and everything that I do is in there. there is an appointment calendar that can reach out to me. They can even, I even have an appointment calendar now on LinkedIn, because that's another new feature that they give you. They give you the ability to put a link in there if you want people to schedule appointments with you offline. So it's kind of nice. But that's where they can find me, and I'm happy to direct them.
Perfect. Amazing. And then always be sure to find the show. If anybody ever misses any portion of the show, know that you can find it in the archive of the LA Talk Radio website. So you can always find that there. Or you can find any episodes that we have on iTunes under Get Yourself the Job on iTunes. We encourage and invite you to please rate us, leave us any feedback. We always want to know how we can improve. Or if you have more lengthy messages, or you have specific guests that you would love to have us interview on the show, you are more than welcome to communicate with us via Facebook and our Get Yourself the Job Facebook page as well, which is an extremely easy way to communicate with us. Please feel free to like us and interact with us there. We often share other similar articles and information about the guests, as well as links to prior shows. So I do invite everybody to tune in, next Monday, July 3rd. And that show, we're going to be talking about how young millennials can get hired. Something went down the wrong tube. So tune in next week as we interview the author of Work It, Get In, Get Noticed, and Get Promoted, Denise Dudley. And have a wonderful and safe 4th of July pre-weekend. Thank you again for being on the show today, Maria.
Thank you, Jennifer. I really appreciate it.
Have a great one. Always a pleasure to have you on.
Okay.
Bye.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.